Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Once Upon a Time at the Oscars. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Once Upon a Time at the Oscars,
the show where we cover every Best Picture nomination from 1927 to today.
I'm your host, Kyle.
And I'm your co-host, Ryan, and I crushed it.
You did crush
it. I think there's one word that's a little different, maybe like cover or like, you know, whatever. But
We'll talk about it off air.
Might be reprimanded.
For your review.
Oh, no. My Hollywood review.
Oh, no. What a good callback.
Thank you.
Hey.
Last episode.
Yeah, last episode of October. When is this? November 2025. Mm-hmm. And the second so Academy Awards.
It is the second Academy Awards. And we've covered, you know, the difference or the difficulty in covering, you know, the year behind these. Because this ceremony did take place in 1930, but specifically it is covering the films that were released between August 1st, 1928, in July 31st of 1929.
Yeah.
So it is important to remember it is the second. So yes, technically we're covering films from 1929, and there was an award ceremony in 1929, but it is the second Academy Awards nomination, ceremony.
It's so frustrating. It drives me nuts, because this is also, 1930 is the only year that there has been two Academy ceremonies.
Frustrating.
Stop it. Stop it. And they do stop it, thankfully.
Yeah.
The third Academy year, they fix it, and we cover one year that it's better.
Yeah.
It's better. But beyond that confusion, here we are, second Academy Awards ceremony. It's been a fun year, really.
It has. Yeah, it's been a fun year. And, you know, we talked a little bit about it. We waxed sentimental at the end of Hollywood Review and talking about, you know, where we've been, what we've started with, and talking with The Patriot, you know, starting with The Patriot and talking about The Patriot in Lost Media. We talked about, you know, our other nominees that we'll list off here shortly. And it's been a fun one. More variety. We talked about off pod, you know, there were three films that we talked about for our previous year. And then for this one specifically, there are, I believe it was five nominated films.
Five nominated.
So more films, more variety. It's been, you know, our first version of this iteration where we have two episodes come out in the same week.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's going to continue to happen as these movies increase, right?
Yeah.
You know, obviously the current structure of 10 movies that are nominated that existed for a few years coming up here shortly, not in the next year, but it's coming.
It's coming.
So it'll happen. But it's been fun to go through and watch these. And I think it has a little bit more variety than we saw in the three.
Yeah.
Not just in numbers, but in terms of what they cover.
Right. Yeah. So much so that one of the movies was like, oh, you like variety? Here's a variety show.
Right. So. For better or worse.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the better being the Lon Chaney of it all.
Exactly. So you brought up multiple episodes coming out throughout the weeks in this month. That's the first time we've done this.
Mm-hmm.
So guys, write in and let us know, or comment or whatever, and let us know how you feel about that format. The idea behind it is I used to do one episode a week. And you would sit in years where there were 10 nominations for 2.5 months.
Yep.
We're trying to kind of expedite
condense?
That a little bit. Yeah,
sure.
Condense and expedite the process so that you're not bogged down in certain years that are slower. We'll be touching on those real soon. And we just kind of want to finish this show before we're like 57.
Yeah, roughly.
So, yeah, right around there probably. And then we'll do a different show. Maybe.
And it'll be very interesting because, you know, we've talked both off and on pod about how much we like watching the Academy Awards ceremony every year. And that's not going to be an exception. That's something we still do, right? So we don't have to talk about it. I mean, we could still in 2040 talk about the ones from 2025, but we can cover those in real time. So it's very fun. And there's a lot of good stuff coming. So let us know, you know, hey, too many episodes in one week.
Yeah.
Let's spread it out a little bit. I think the current setup of what we have is working pretty well. I'm very happy with what we've been able to put out. So excited to see how you guys are enjoying it, but we've loved the feedback we've gotten so far. So just keep it up.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's outaopodcast@gmail.com. If you want to send in an email, long form, lots of words.
Yep. And if you're not liking what you hear, you can find us at Mickey Mutineers Podcast and we'll gladly take all of your feedback.
Perfect. I love it. So if we're time traveling back, we're sitting April 3rd, 1930. Let's talk details. Let's talk the Academy Awards.
Sure. So we find ourselves in the Coconut Grove, which is at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. Not quite as luxurious of a name as the previous Academy Awards, but, you know, Coconut Grove, still interesting. Mm-hmm. So this specifically has a very interesting thing where, you know, we've entered a year of firsts. We are first covering talkies being featured in our Academy Awards, right? We have talkies that have been introduced here now. And on top of that, now this is the first actual broadcast of the Academy Awards, courtesy of the local station KNX of Los Angeles. So we still aren't televised, but we are broadcast through radio. So pretty cool to be a part of that, something like that.
And that sets up every year after this. Now every Academy ceremony will be broadcast, either radio, television, all of the above. So this is history making right here.
That is true. And we did have a host, and that host was William C. DeMille.
That's right.
So what was the significance of Mr. DeMille?
So just like the year prior where President of the Academy was host at the ceremony, that was Douglas Fairbanks, William C. DeMille is the current Academy president. So big deal. He was a director.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
For my close-up, Mr. DeMille. Yeah.
American screenwriter and film director.
Perfect. So, yeah, I think in the next year, he's got a few films that show up that he directed.
Now, mostly silent era is what he's mostly known for with his direction.
Yeah.
But he did direct a few outside of that.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I say as I couldn't remember if he was a director.
Sure. That's good podcasting.
You've got that right.
So a couple of changes here, right? So there's a couple of things that have changed. The most expected change of those is going to be we've come out of silent films.
Right.
Right. There isn't one film that has been nominated for Best Picture here that is entirely silent. So there's a couple of things that got rid of. Specifically, you'll hear us mention Best Writing. Now, that's true, but it doesn't mention title cards. Previously, Best Writing was kind of split, much like to sound, where you would see editing and mixing. Writing back then was split between, you know, screenplay versus title cards.
Right.
The idea of Best Writing for title writing has been discontinued because there isn't a need for it anymore.
Yeah.
Right? So that's just happenstance. Unfortunately, Best Engineering Effects, Best Unique, and Artistic Production also was taken off.
Yeah.
So we don't have those awards anymore. Do you feel that, though?
Do I feel that they should have been removed, or do I feel the...
Do you feel that absence is what I'm asking?
I see. Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think there was really a single title card in any of the movies we watched this year.
Not true. There is a title card that is held up by those three little girls in Hollywood Review in the beginning and the end.
Oh, okay.
Wow, that's... you look so foolish right
Damn,
now.
Damn, you got me.
I got you so bad.
This is twice in one episode.
No, outside of that, not a single one.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously it makes sense that that's gone. You feel it, but... in a way, you're excited that it is gone.
Yeah, that's true.
Sorry, silent films. The engineering effects, really, there was nothing as ground... Well, the sound, of course you have sound, but there's nothing that shows up on screen that is as impressive as Wings, I would say, this year.
That's correct. I mean, you know, a title like Best Unique and Artistic Production sounds like something you'd always want to give credit for, but you don't really feel that here. There is still production that's being talked about, so there's still that. But I agree, for the most part, you're not really feeling it.
Yeah.
It's sad to see some of those things go, and certainly when people work on movies, you want to see as much as possible. Thankfully, we're in a place now where we're talking more about the consideration of, like, stunts being, like, you know, honored at the awards. So hopefully we continue to see that happen. But for the time being, I agree. It makes sense that these were removed at the time.
Right.
They also merged the Best Director nominations. So previously, much like, you know, with Best Picture, you look at comedy or drama. In this, you are looking at a merger of those two. So Best Director is just among all the genres that you discuss. The final and last change that we had here is that the awards for best writing, both for adaptation and original story, were merged into a single best writing award. And it's interesting because that doesn't stick.
No, it doesn't.
Right? I mean, I believe it's the fourth Academy Awards where that splits again. But at least for the second Academy Awards, we did see best writing merge into one nomination.
Yeah, I kind of like that it's been reduced so much, the amount of categories this year.
Definitely.
It makes it easy to keep track of. It makes for a shorter podcast episode in the year of 2025.
True.
Which is probably, you're looking forward to that after the lengthy discussion of the Hollywood Review.
Depending on how we feel about certain musical productions, I feel like.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Careful. Better watch out. Or you know.
We'll get our hands on you.
But seven categories. That's it. That's what we're dealing with. I think the biggest bummer is that this year didn't have any special awards.
Mm.
The first year, obviously, you had... I say obviously, forgive me. It's not obvious unless you listen to the show.
Go ahead.
The Jazz Singer got a special award because it was the first introduction of sound in a movie. You had Charlie Chaplin walk away with a special award. There were some very important things. I think that's kind of one of my favorite moments of the Oscars in present day, is seeing people who have contributed so much to film itself. It almost feels more reasonable than awarding like the best picture, because that's so subjective. It's hard to deny that Charlie Chaplin did a lot for cinema in general. So I like the special award. I feel that absence here.
True. It is much more in the now. I think the first Academy Award ceremony, it makes sense that they're trying to cover everything that came before. Mm. And now it's very much what happened in the past year. And you feel that, right? With the changes that are being made, both in exclusions and inclusions. So ultimately, I wish they would do that. But also, I kind of wish that the current nomination or the current Academy Awards would do similar things in terms of, like, you know, I mean, they do still very much have like the Cecil B. DeMille Award and other awards given to like longevity. Sure. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to see a continuation of that. So it sucks to see it removed from here. But hard to say whether or not we felt it.
Yeah, that's true. I guess the cool thing is those special awards help us go back now and,
totally,
and say, oh, okay, that's what was contributed. Here, it's like, I bet there was something massive that I'm just not aware of because the standout, the call out isn't there for me to research.
True.
Really, it makes me lazy. I have to go look that up myself.
Yeah.
What was important? How dare you?
Yeah, just tell me.
Another big change this year, the winners were not announced until the actual ceremony.
Correct.
So that's kind of cool. There was this anticipation of the awards, and people wanted to know who's going to win, who's going to take home the big prize. That's something that carried on for the rest of time up until today. People make this an event, and that's what they were doing starting this year.
Well, I mean, one big part of that is being broadcast on radio. Right. So now it's this shared experience of like a lot of other people are finding out for the first time versus, well, we all know what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
Right. So I like that aspect. I think the surprise makes way more sense.
Yeah.
I think that also helps the existence of people like you and I on this podcast forum of discussing, you know, the possibility of who should be nominated. Sidebar, something I'm very interested in doing is when we cover the 2025 Oscar ceremony, I'm very excited for you and us to talk a little bit less about the historical side of, you know, how this won and what it did, but also theorizing. I think that's a lot of fun to play when we talk about rankings and stuff. So very interested to do that. It's going to be a little different than this.
Yeah.
But I very much agree that the surprise element is something that truly means a lot to me for the community effort of it all.
Right.
So love that change that's been made here.
It's really cool to think about as well. The Academy, one of the big reasons that they were established to begin with was to kind of draw attention to Hollywood and clean it up, if you will, and give it a better image. This second year, like you said, allowed more people to listen to the awards and kind of play along. So this is really beyond the first year. This is the first time that the Oscars become more of a performance and kind of do their part in showcasing. This is what your Hollywood really is. This is who these celebrities really are. It kind of boosts the whole concept of celebrity and Hollywood in general.
Yeah, because it's the level of accessibility, but without being in the room.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like the glamorization of like, oh, to be in that room.
You exactly.
Know? But hear about it.
Exactly.
Or at least be like ear on the door, but not inside.
Yeah.
That's the way to put it. So this is a really interesting year for the Academy Awards ceremony, mostly because it kind of feels a little split, I guess the best way to put it. So a couple of things. This is kind of starting with a spoiler, not really. It's interesting that we are in 2025. This is 1930 that this is happening. Mm-hmm. So roughly about 95 years, right? In the 95 years, the second Academy Awards ceremony is the only year in which no film won more than one Oscar.
Wow.
Right? And maybe because there's 10 films now, roughly.
Yeah.
I mean, right. There's many, many, many films that are nominated for Oscars, but of the best pictures, 10.
Yeah, yeah.
The numbers are now a little skewed to where, like, hey, generally you're probably going to win more than one. And there's going to be one that's like a little heavier hit. We talk about something called the Big Five, right?
Right.
The Big Five, keep me honest, is going to be your best picture, best director, best actor, mm-hmm. best actress, and your writing, screenplay.
Correct.
Correct? Yeah. So theoretically, the majority of the movies that you see that win best picture have some combination of those two. Or of those five. So any variation of best acting or best directing or best writing is going to follow up with best picture. It makes a bit of sense that in 1930, that there's going to be, you know, with only five films that are nominated for best picture, mm-hmm. not as many films are going to be repeats.
Right.
Especially with, you know, the nominations that exist outside of best picture with films that aren't nominated for best picture.
Yeah.
So it is interesting, but it's also interesting that it's the only year where that happened.
And I think the small number of categories also contributes to that.
Only seven.
Seven, that's it.
Yeah.
So you've got your five nominated for Best Picture. They have a chance to win one of seven Oscars. It's still shocking because you would think that your Best Picture takes home at least one other award.
And we'll get to that mm-hmm. because I think this is one where you think that and you're like, wow, that's really surprising. Then you see what won, you're like,
right.
Well, I get it.
I say that as kind of a general statement and not sure. specific to
well,
to
I the say winners. It specifically about this. It's a little, you kind of see why at that point. So it's interesting because, I mean, let me ask you a question. We're potting in real time on this. Do we want to start at the end and talk through it, or do you want to build our way up to the final best picture?
Let's build our way up
okay.
to the best picture.
I have a little detail I want to share on that later. But so let's talk our way up here. So anything else you want to mention about the ceremony itself before we talk about the actual awards?
I don't think so. We haven't reached the point where at the Oscars there's any drama, there's any memorable moments, you know, they're not reading the wrong name, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it really does kind of become a, okay, tell me who won.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Well,
giddy up.
Hold on now. Giddy down, because we're not going to get there just yet, but we're on our way. So let's talk a little bit about nominations, specifically the nominations here. Kind of interesting. We talked about In Old Arizona, and we briefly discussed The Patriot in our Lost Media episode. They each have five nominations, right? So right. a lot of nominations there. Tied the record for film receiving the most nominations for the Academy Awards. Kind of interesting. A few records set with this one. And I think that's my point, is that we're 95 or so ceremonies in. To have that record set and then not broken in the second Academy Awards is interesting.
I attribute that to these seven categories.
True.
There's got to be so much overlap.
That makes sense. Obviously, the record or the film that set that record the year prior was Seventh Heaven. Mm. So it makes a bit of sense. And then Broken the next year. So,
boom.
I imagine we'll continue to see that happen. So let's go over what specifically was nominated. I think you should go over the nominations, but I want to make sure that I mentioned, you know, we talk about Best Picture for the most part here, the films that were nominated for Best Picture, Outstanding Picture. But the films that were nominated across the board for the Academy Awards are as follows. Madam X, The Valiant, Our Dancing Daughters, and Street Angel all had two nominations. The Broadway Melody, Alibi, and The Divine Lady had three nominations each. And as I mentioned, leading the pack, The Patriot and In Old Arizona had five nominations. But those were your nine films that were nominated through these seven categories that we'll talk about.
It's wild. It was really just nine films.
It really was, yeah.
Wow. Well, Yeah, I mean, we can do the whole bit where we go category by category and kind of discuss.
Well, I should take that back. Multiple nominations.
Okay, so there were more films.
There were more films.
One nomination.
Correct, yes. Okay. So you'll see that in the best acting categories.
Okay.
But the multiple nominations, it was just those 9 films.
Copy that.
That's correct.
That makes way more sense.
I was about to say.
I was like,
that's your face. I was like, you've done this before. That can't be right.
I was like, that's almost an Oscar for film nominated. The two that didn't win then?
Yeah.
I feel bad for them. So let's go ahead and we'll start with writing. How's that sound?
Yeah, it sounds great.
So for writing, you had, this is one of those weird things where they were still nominating either one movie, multiple movies, or just like their overall body of work.
Right.
So for this, we've got Tom Barry, who did In Old Arizona and The Valiant. Elliot Clawson, nominated for The Cop, The Leatherneck, Sal of Singapore, and Skyscraper. Hans Crayley, interesting here, got 2 different nominations, it looks like.
Right.
The Last of Miss Cheney, and then The Patriot. I wonder if that is an adapted and original kind of concept.
I believe it is.
And then Josephine Lovett for Our Dancing Daughters, and Bess Meredith for A Woman of Affairs and Wonder of Women. The award for this went to Hans Crayley for The Patriot. Kind of bums me out, not only that The Patriot won for this, but it was also had the highest number of nominations tied with In Old Arizona, and we can't watch it.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's one thing when we say like there's films that aren't really recognized by the Academy or anyone else, and those are lost, and it makes a bit of sense, but like we're talking about an Oscar winner.
Right.
Right? And like nominated for writing. Well, one for writing, but nominated for many other things. So I agree. It's frustrating that doesn't exist. But at the time, I think I have to give some leniency back then and even later on that like maybe the belief wasn't that this was the only copy. But like, you know, as someone who's been on Spaceship Earth so many times, we've seen what happened in Rome. So like, why wouldn't we want to learn from our mistakes when it comes to fires? You know,
it's like what? And then, oh, okay. I get it.
Yeah. Think Phoenicians. So it's, if you haven't been on Spaceship Earth, do so. Fun little fact, my wife, Taylor, was told by her father for years when they went to Epcot that there is no ride inside the ball. So when Taylor and I went for the first time, I was like, hey, do you want to go on Spaceship Earth? And she's like, where's that? I was like, it's in the Epcot ball. She's like, there isn't a ride in the Epcot ball. I was like, yeah, there is. And the whole ride, she was just like, what's going on? Like, I was told this didn't exist.
When did they add this?
And there was like a 5 to 10 minute phone call with her dad afterwards where she was like, hey, did you know? And he's just laughing nonstop. He's like, I just didn't want to go on it.
Wow. That'd be like, what do you mean? Well, you didn't tell me that I had a twin sister that lives in, I don't know, California.
No, I just didn't want to introduce you to, that's all.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. Hey, Steve. Shout out.
Yeah, this is one of those, the writing category, again, we didn't get to watch The Patriot. So the only other film we actually viewed was In Old Arizona. So it's hard to pass any kind of judgment on what I thought actually deserved it or not. Yeah, I mean, what can you say?
I thought In Old Arizona was written fine. I don't think it was like the best writing. I did note the line that I really liked of, you know, hey, everyone can be wrong. That's why they added erasers to lead pencils.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a good line. I liked that line. But otherwise, it's not hard to imagine a world in which these other, you know, The Patriot and these other 5 or however many films were nominated for best writing could out supersede that.
Sure. Yeah. And it's maybe one day we'll go back and we'll watch
maybe one
every nominee ever that
don't,
we can.
Don't do that to me. Please don't. I actually like watching current films as well. So please.
Yeah. Listen, get on my level and don't watch anything that's come out past 1940. Please.
Deal.
Moving on to the next category. Do you want to, pick one?
Yeah, let's do Best Cinematography.
Sure.
So the following films were nominated for Best Cinematography. You had Street Angel, Ernest Palmer was nominated for this. Our Dancing Daughters, George Barnes. In Old Arizona, Arthur Edison. The Divine Lady, John F. Seitz. And Four Devils by Ernest Palmer. He's shown up twice on here. Mm. And White Shadows in the South Seas, Clyde DeVinna. Now, of these, White Shadows in the South Seas did pick up Best Cinematography. Have you seen this film?
I have not seen this film.
Good note.
Yep.
We can't comment on it.
Moving on. It's such a bummer. I would love to go back and watch all of these, but it's so time-consuming. That does bring up a good point, though. One of the ideas I had for the Patreon was to do a secondary show where we just cover, we do one bonus episode a month, and we pick a category.
Mm.
And we watch all the movies for that category for that year. It would be an additional like 5 movies to watch every year, so it's kind of a big ask. But if I want to set like a Patreon backer goal, and if we hit that goal, then we'll do it, because it'll, sorry guys, it'll be worth it. But I think that would be fun to experience, like, oh, let's look at the best international category, you know, and really dive into that. So that might be something we do in the future. If you guys are interested in that and you want to suggest either a category or you want to just support the show so that we can hit that goal, patreon.com/OUTAO podcast. Check it out. There's other cool stuff you can do there as well.
Yeah, we appreciate you. Thanks for checking it out.
Thanks.
So where do you want to go next?
Let's move on to art direction.
Love it.
So art direction, we have The Patriot, Hans Dreyer, The Bridge of San Luis Rey, and other pictures for Cedric Gibbons, huge name, correct me if I'm wrong, the creator of the Oscar statuette.
Correct. We talked about him last year.
Yes, we did. Dynamite, not to be confused with A House of Dynamite. That's going to go to Mitchell Leeson. And then you have Alibi, The Awakening. Yep, just those two for William Cameron Menzies, another huge name we'll see in the coming years.
Mm-hmm.
And Street Angel for going to Harry Oliver. The winner of art direction is going to be Cedric Gibbons.
Specifically the Bridge of San Luis Rey.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, like we said, the creator of the Academy Awards statuette, big name. He will, you see his name so often in the coming years. I'm sure we've dropped his name some other time already. If not, we will.
Well, when we talked about the design of the statues.
Sure, right? Yeah.
I do think it's funny, though, that you come up with the design of the statues and then 1 year later you're winning one.
Yeah.
That does feel a little weighted.
It does. Do you think you go home with a statue and you're just like, I spent months designing this. I don't want to look at it anymore.
I think it's funnier. I always think petty is a really funny thing. Mm. So I think it'd be great if he designed it. He was like, hey, so I get one, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, nah, sorry, we just only made like, you know, 7 of these. He's like, okay.
So then he had to go and like work on a movie, and he's like, ah.
Yeah, he's like, well, the Bridge of San Luis Rey sounds pretty cool. Let me get to work on that.
Yeah.
And then take one home. I like that a lot.
It is a good headcanon. This is another category, though. We only got to watch Alibi.
We did.
We did talk very highly about Alibi's art direction, proto neo-noir kind of, well, not neo-noir, excuse me, proto-noir.
Yeah, true.
It looks great. It's one of the highlights of the movie. You can tell why it was nominated for art direction. So I'd be really curious to see. Cedric Gibbons and William Cameron Menzies are such huge names. I can only imagine what the design of those films look like.
Yeah, it's also, you know, we talked a lot about Numbers Game last year, with last year's nominations, rather. So to see that William Cameron Menzies was nominated twice for this.
Right.
There's got to be a little bit of, and especially when one of your films, Alibi, is picking up multiple nominations, 2 other nominations, you got to feel a little confidence going into this.
Right.
So interesting that it didn't go his way on that.
Yeah. How about directing? You want to hop on that?
I would love to hop on directing. So for best director, we had a number of nominations. So 6 total. We had Frank Lloyd, who was nominated, but what's interesting, for separate films, separately, not just, you know, Frank Lloyd for these 2. So Frank Lloyd was nominated for The Divine Lady, was nominated for The Drag, and nominated for Weary River.
Hmm.
Ernst Liebich was nominated for The Patriot. Lionel Barrymore, Madame X, also made an appearance in Hollywood Review, as we mentioned.
Right, yeah.
Irving Cummings was nominated for In Old Arizona, and Harry Beaumont was nominated for The Broadway Melody. Now, Frank Lloyd did end up winning Best Director, but won it specifically for The Divine Lady. Now, was this a scenario, correct me if I'm wrong, where he was nominated for those 3 and won, or was he specifically winning for The Divine Lady?
So, what I'm reading here, and I assume this goes for the writing category as well with Hans Krehle,
mm-hmm.
they're recognized for multiple films, but the document signed by the Academy during the actual award giving was specifically for The Divine Lady.
That's everything I'm seeing, too, is that it does specifically cite The Divine Lady and the other 2 as nominations.
Right, yeah.
So I just want to make sure I'm correct on that. But yes, yeah, so The Divine Lady is the film that won Frank Lloyd Best Director.
Right. Something interesting here to point out, there is a name that has been omitted, and that's going to be Raoul Walsh, who co-directed I guess is what you'd call it, in Old Arizona with Irving Cummings. Mm-hmm. And if you were there for our In Old Arizona episode, that is the gentleman who was set to star in the film and tragically lost his eye in a jackrabbit incident.
I see you covering your mouth right now. I'm also trying to...
just yeah. wild.
It is wild.
But it's fascinating to me that he was not nominated for this.
It is weird that there's not a mention of it, right? Because it's not like they'd want to erase that from history.
Right.
If they'd want to erase many things from history, I think that that film wouldn't exist the way that it does right now.
Good point.
It's a little strange, especially with Raoul being such a part of the movie itself.
Right.
So, yeah. I don't know. Strange.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened there. This is the first category I think we can have a little bit of discussion on who we think should have won and
sure.
blah, blah, blah.
Because, well, we've seen multiples of them, right?
Right. We've seen a whopping two.
Hey, that's multiple. That's more than one.
Yeah. So you did have three Best Pictures candidates here nominated for directing, and we saw two, The Broadway Melody and In Old Arizona.
Discussed The Patriot, but we're unable to watch it, obviously. Lost of time.
Correct. So that being said, I mean, what are you thinking?
I mean, it's... I wouldn't watch The Broadway Melody or In Old Arizona and think that there's incredible direction in either. I think that there's some great direction in Alibi.
Yes.
I thought that, you know, we discussed how little camera work that I was surprised by how little camera work there was in Hollywood Review of 1929. Mm. But what there was, I was very impressed by.
Sure.
So I would have thought some level of direction there would have been, you know, acceptable, but alas, not even nominated. So between the two, not incredibly surprised to see Broadway Melody nor In Old Arizona tank Best Director, but interested in The Divine Lady. Honestly, interested in Frank Lloyd, because we mentioned previously that the films that are nominated in this time period had to have been released between August 1st, 1928 and July 31st, 1929. So 364 calendar days, right?
Right.
And at that point, Frank Lloyd released three: The Divine Lady, Weary River, and Drac. So interesting, because we talk about someone like, you know, in current day 2025, we see Osgood Perkins mentioned. Yorgos Lanthimos, even, where Yorgos has a movie coming out every year for the past 3 years. We see in the past, I mean, in November, year and some change, Osgood Perkins releases Long Legs, The Monkey, and Keeper.
Yeah.
So interesting to see a similar situation here, where a director is releasing three movies within the span of 364 calendar days.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And I think it was more common back in this time period,
sure,
because the studio system required, hey man, you got to put out X amount of movies in this time frame,
right,
to keep your contract going.
Well, and that's a good point that, like, you know, they obviously they're making films more quickly, but my point more so being that they're all nominated for Best Director.
Right.
So clearly they're all quality.
Sure,
right?
Yeah. And I wonder too if that is the reason that he took this win, because they said, wow, these are all great movies. Specifically, here's the award for this one.
Mm.
But good job at keeping up with your contract, bud.
Yeah, true. I mean, important to note that none of the three movies that he was nominated for were nominated for Best Picture.
Right,
so.
Yeah. That's a good point.
So, acting.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about acting?
Yeah, I want to start with actress. There's a little bit of interesting trivia here.
Let's talk about it.
So you have Ruth Chatterton in Madam X.
Great name, by the way.
Right? Isn't that nice?
Chatterton, yeah.
It's good. Betty Compson in The Barker. Jean Eagles in The Letter. Corinne Griffith in The Divine Lady. Bessie Love in The Broadway Melody.
Your girl.
I love her. And Mary Pickford in Coquette. Mary Pickford took home this win in what I believe, from today's point of view, to be a very controversial win.
How's that?
Mary Pickford, for this movie, is kind of considered to be the first person to campaign for an Oscar.
Mm.
And what she did, her home, I forget what it's called. It's like Pickfordia or something. It has a strange...
Stop it.
It's got a name like that. It's not Pickfordia.
So she named her home.
Yes.
And then like refers to her home as that, like it's
yeah.
a country.
It's like Pickford Ranch or Pickford Estates or something like that. That is like
Pickfordia is a little ridiculous.
It is.
So if it's that, I'm gonna favor that.
It's not that, but it's not like Pickford Estates. It's like
it's something in between
Pickford Land or
that's worse.
It
sounds bad.
But she invited a lot of the Academy members who were up to for the voting, over to her home, and she gave them sandwiches and things and kind of said, oh, I worked so hard on my role in Coquette. So it's a little controversial, but this is also a tradition that goes on for the rest of Academy history.
It's difficult because the thing that you may have mentioned, but I didn't hear, but I don't believe was mentioned, was that her status, right? She was a founding member of AMPUS, your Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. So being a founding member and having that status and then doing this and married to its first president.
Yes.
Is going to kind of like put some eyes on you that probably shouldn't exist. And it's worth noting that the other nominees were asked about, you know, this whole process. And they were mentioning that they weren't made aware of their status, right? So they just were nominated and that was it. There was no like campaigning, because campaigning wasn't a thing. We didn't know to do it.
Right.
So this is the first real like show of campaigning.
Yeah. And it's a very controversial thing in today's Oscar buzz, because it kind of takes away from the actual performance or the art in the actual movie. But it's something that it just happens. It exists. I think if the first Academy Award ceremony would have hidden the winners in the same way, campaigning would have shown its face then.
Right. Well, I mean, like, you know, campaigns are commonplace now, and it's just something that the studio releases.
Right.
Right. So now there's proof that's released of like, hey, here's why this person should be considered for this.
Exactly.
So back then, without that present, Mary Pickford saw it on herself to campaign for herself to make sure people knew of her performance.
Yeah.
Whether it was earned or not, that's interesting, but it's something that is like commonplace now. Maybe not to this degree of like, let me have people over, but studios learned to take over so there wasn't the conflict of interest.
Right, yeah. And I wonder how quickly that becomes just commonplace of the studio itself going, for your consideration, blah.
Yeah.
That being said, I want to call out my favorite campaigning for an actor moment. And that's going to be when David Lynch was campaigning for Laura Dern.
Oh my God, that image.
He has the cow on the side of the road. For your consideration, Laura Dern.
Yeah.
Sitting there with his little megaphone. Love it.
I really hope if Bradley Cooper does move forward with nominations for his upcoming film. Oh my God, I just completely blanked on the name. The stand-up film that he's doing with Will Arnett and Laura Dern.
Oh, I don't remember.
Great. So he's doing a film. I'm going to remember in 5 minutes and scream it like, you know, I just woke up from a nightmare.
Perfect.
But specifically, Is This Thing On? That's it. Great.
Oh, nailed it.
Nailed it. Didn't have to look that up. Great. So Is This Thing On? Laura Dern is in it. And if Laura Dern is nominated for Best Actress or Best Supporting, I really need Bradley Cooper to just
pick up where Lynch left off.
Yeah, yes. That would be fantastic.
I love it.
It's interesting because there's one other aspect of this.
Okay.
Right? At least one other that I know of. And that's that we had another first with the nominations here for this Academy Awards. And it's specifically, not just first, but to date only example, where Jean Eagles was the actress to become posthumously nominated for Best Actress.
Interesting.
So first scenario where that happened, but also, and this is what I think is most interesting, last. Which, you know, thankfully, we don't ever like, you know, those scenarios happening. It has happened before for actor. Obviously, sure. You know, Heath Ledger, The Dark Knight was nominated. But only time that Best Actress has had a posthumous.
Wow.
Do you say posthumous, by the way? I always, that feels like Worcestershire sauce, or however you say it.
Right.
Yeah, it feels like one of those things where it's like there's 10 ways to say it.
You know, I think for the longest time I said, say it again.
Posthumous.
Is that how you said it the first time?
I don't know.
I thought you said posthumous.
I might have.
Who knows? I think I used to say posthumous, and it sounded too comical for talking about someone who is deceased.
Yeah.
So I started saying posthumous.
It sounds a little more like, for lack of a better word, fancy, right?
Right.
Like that's how you're supposed to do it.
Like there's a little more respect on the what's going on.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Humus and humorous is too close.
I don't love how close that is because it's like I passed and everyone's laughing.
Teehee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't love that. So anyways, Jean Eagles, an interesting bit of, an interesting bit of history that it was the first, again, bit of sense, but last that's happened.
Totally. I will say the only movie that we watched for this was The Broadway Melody with my girl Bessie Love.
Correct.
And I did, because of Mary Pickford's reputation as campaigning for this Oscar, I went and I watched a little bit of Coquette yesterday. I made it about halfway through. It's not something that I know that I'll finish. It's kind of the story of a Southern woman who's trying to woo two different men, or two men are fighting for her affection. And she has this really weird Southern accent. I'm not a huge fan of it, but I wanted to see what her performance was like and if it was worthy of this win. Me personally, I think she does a good job with her display of emotions, but the performance itself is nowhere near to Janet Gaynor in the previous year and, sure. and what she was able to do with just her eyes. Yeah, no. That being said, the only other performance I saw was Bessie Love. Give it to Bessie Love. Give her my love. Shout out to you, Bessie.
You and Bessie, I swear. So speaking of best actress, we talked about the big five, right?
Right.
The big five, director, acting, two levels of acting.
Writing
and picture. So thank you for that. So interesting thing I forgot to mention is that we talked about the Divine Lady winning direction, right? So I did some research on this while we were talking about it just to make sure that I'm right. You talked about this before too, that you wrote this down, that The Divine Lady was the last film to win Best Director without receiving a Best Picture nomination.
Crazy.
Which is interesting, because you would think if this was the best example of directing, that would have lended itself pretty heavily to be nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
So that's why you don't really see that happen anymore, where if it's nominated for Best Director, chances are you've already picked up that Best Picture nomination.
Right.
So, and also now, numbers game. 10 films nominated for Best Picture, 5 directors nominated for Best Director, it makes sense that they're going to show up as Best Picture.
Right.
But crazy that there's zero overlap. There's not one scenario past this where that happened.
I know. There's part of me where my brain is immediately like, oh, that's not true. That can't be true.
Sure.
Let me think of a moment. And obviously I can't think of any of that. But it's bizarre that it's, like you said, 95 years later, 94, 93...
Around.
Yeah.
90 plus. But also, that's the thing, is that it's not, you know, a director who was nominated for Best Direction or Best Director. It was who won Best Director, but nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, okay, right.
So there's been plenty of other examples where a director has been nominated for a film that was not nominated for Best Picture, but they didn't win.
Okay, that's more believable and makes more sense.
Yes.
Not that I was calling you a liar. But you called me out for getting two things wrong already, so I'm reaching.
Hey, you know what? I tell you this with full sincerity. I will be wrong 5 more times before I leave your house.
Perfect. So please hurry. Make that happen.
Well, I'm going to pepper him in. We'll just see if you notice.
Perfect. Here you go. Best actor.
Best actor. So let's talk about it. So we had Paul Mooney, the Valiant, as James Dyke. Interesting that we're getting names now.
Yeah.
Wow, look at that. So, Lewis Stone in The Patriot as Count Palin.
Welcome back, Lewis.
Welcome back, Lewis. We'll see you soon.
We're a big fan.
You'll be back. We have George Bancroft in Thunderbolt as, you're not going to get this, Thunderbolt Jim Lang.
Oh, he hates the Hulk.
He does hate the Hulk. Thank you for our Marvel fans who have stayed around this long.
Yeah.
Warner Baxter in Old Arizona as a Cisco Kid. Not Raul, but Warner instead. And then we have Chester Morris in Alibi as Chick Williams.
Chick Williams.
So Warner Baxter did pick up the win here as the Cisco Kid in Old Arizona. So I thought, you know, we've seen Alibi. We have not seen Thunderbolt, or I should say I haven't seen Thunderbolt or The Valiant, and we have not seen The Patriot as it's not available to us.
Right.
But I see this. I do see this. I think it's fair. Obviously, a performance that has its complications.
Sure.
And it's controversy with the element of, well, specifically that Warner was a Caucasian man playing the Cisco Kid.
Correct.
And this is a pretty problematic performance. But given that aside, looking at the actual performance of the film, I mean, it's his movie, right?
Totally.
Like, there's some interesting things happening otherwise, but he carries the movie. The movie is very interesting throughout because of his performance, and you feel his heartbreak. When he feels betrayed, when he realizes he's been betrayed.
Absolutely.
I stand by it more so than Chick Williams in Alibi, but between the two that I saw, that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, and Warner Baxter creates the Cisco Kid, a character that existed on the page for a while.
Right.
But he brought him to the big screen, and we talked about the numerous sequels and continuation of the Cisco Kid's legacy on the big screen. I think that's speaks a lot. Obviously, that's the future. We're not aware of that. But that alone speaks on how iconic this performance is. It brought us a long-lasting character in the Cisco Kid.
Right.
We did talk a lot about Chester Morris during the Alibi episode, and he wasn't our favorite performance in that movie itself.
No.
So it's hard to call him the more memorable or the more engaging performance overall this year.
Yeah, that one was a little surprising to see that nomination come out of Alibi, mm-hmm. specifically.
And not Regis Tomei.
Correct. Just chewing up the screen in that. I think given the reception that we've read for The Patriot and just the nominations, it's a little surprising that Lewis didn't win for The Patriot. Again, a performance I haven't seen, but it seems like there is much more gravitas to that level of character work than there was in Old Arizona. I mean, in Old Arizona, essentially a comedy. Right, just a little bit. I mean, a comedy adventure, maybe, but not much of a drama. Patriot, from what we've read and covered in our episode, much more of a historical drama biopic, right?
Right.
So, interesting that that didn't pick up the win. So, I have a couple questions about that, but ultimately not something I've seen, so I can't say.
Kind of refreshing, though, that, you know, the Oscar bait movie didn't really pick up any steam.
I think there's something really funny. I know exactly what you're saying about Oscar bait, but the second Academy Award nominations, to hear someone be like, that's Oscar bait, is right. very funny.
Yeah.
Something I would love to see happen more in the second iteration of somebody like, that's bait.
I'm curious what the first example of us going, oh, that's Oscar bait right there. Or better yet, because we'll probably see it, the first Best Picture Oscar bait movie.
I'm going to be so honest with you. If I can give you a hot take right now, and I think this lends itself perfectly to our next category, I think we've run into our first example of Oscar bait.
Interesting.
Because I think we got to think about the time that we're in right now.
Sure.
Right? Before I do that, why don't you talk us through the nominations of Best Picture?
So the moment you've all been waiting for, Outstanding Picture. Let me correct you.
Look, that's not what it's going to be called in the future.
No, so. It's not, but that's one for Kyle.
Also, before I even looked up and saw, I could feel you staring at me, just so you know. So let's do that. You know what? You got me. Congratulations.
Nailed it.
There it is.
My hair is getting too long as well, so I saw it covering my eye, and I was like, where are you? And I got this right. Okay, so.
I'm so sorry.
The Patriot, Paramount Famous Lasky, In Old Arizona, Fox Pictures. Mm-hmm. Hollywood Review, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, Alibi, Art Cinema, and United Artists. And finally, your Outstanding Picture winner, The Broadway Melody of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.
So this is what I wanted to bring up, is that in 1929, we were introduced to talkies, right? The idea, or maybe 1928, but this is the time that we're introduced to talkies.
Yeah.
And we then ask ourselves, what is capable of us, right? What are we capable of now that we have this technology to where we can record audio? And I mentioned in our previous year of doing this podcast, well, previous month, last month, where we talked about this, where it was interesting that as soon as they learned that they could walk, that they ran.
Yes.
Right? That they said, well, we're going to do two musicals, right? I think it's a little Oscar baity that of this, that they won, that the Broadway Melody won. Now, I don't think the Broadway Melody is the best of the films that we watched for this. I don't fully understand why it was nominated. Nominated makes sense, but one specifically. Now, between this and Hollywood Review, it is the more traditional musical.
Sure.
Right? I mentioned how Review is more of a variety show that's filmed, and the audience is you. There is no audience there. You are the audience.
Right.
So it's more traditional musical, and it makes sense that in the first year that the Academy Awards have talkies factored in, that something as brave as a decision as a musical in that year is going to make a nomination. It makes even more sense they would want it to win, right? Because it shows that level of achievement and excellence. So my hot take is that that's the first example of Oscar bait where it's like, well, this had to win, right? Because it is the first only musical, Hollywood Review, again, musicals, but not really a musical in the sense of a narrative pushing the, or the songs pushing this narrative.
Right.
Right. So yeah, I think that's where I stand on it.
Interesting.
It's a little surprising to see that this is the first win, especially since the first year I understood, right? Seeing that win made perfect sense. Here, I don't know. It's a weird one.
Yeah.
Cause I enjoyed my time with Alibi fine. That stood out a little bit more in the narrative aspect more than In Old Arizona did in terms of winning Best Picture. But it's also, and this is, you know, something I want to mention first, but didn't want to give anything away, and you kind of alluded to this, of the seven nominations, there's not one repeat win.
Right. Yeah.
Right? These films won one award each, and that's it.
Yeah.
So that, to me, also seems like a pretty weird spread, that there would be like, well, hey, the best film is this, but best direction is that, but also best actor and actress is this. Interesting that that split the way that it did. So to me, it feels kind of like, I don't know, I have more questions about Broadway Melody winning, not like a conspiracy thing, but just more like them being like, well, I mean, it should be this, right? Like, not even how good it is, but just it in general.
Yeah, I get that. I imagine that the voting members of the Academy probably were like, wow, this is a big deal. This is completely, not only, again, if you look at the Oscars as a system put in place to kind of promote Hollywood, it makes sense that the members of the Academy would be like, hey, this is a big deal. This is what won. This is what we're going to advertise. This is what's going to play on the radio. And we're mm-hmm. going to say, this is it. This is the movie of the year. This is the one. So I get that, how maybe the votes were kind of skewed, not so that it could win an Oscar, but so that the Oscars itself could showcase the future of film. And I think I'm kind of, or maybe both of us are discrediting the popularity of the musical at the time.
Sure.
Now, when a musical comes out, it has to be great. It has to do something incredible. Here, this being one of the first examples of a musical on the big screen, people were going to the theater and they were going to see musicals on stage specifically. There was kind of more of an acceptance of the musical by the general population to begin with.
Sure.
So I think the opportunity to see this on the big screen, to see something with this much, the excitement of a big production musical, and you're seeing little things that could only exist as a movie. The helicopter view at the beginning of the movie, that's like, wow, look at this. Not a big deal for us. Mind-blowing in 1928 or 29. So I don't know that I would call this Oscar bait, where they made the movie with the intention of winning the Oscar.
Sure.
I think the Oscars may have voted for it specifically to help, I don't, just film in general and the industry in general.
And that's how I mean it. So you're absolutely right. That's the incorrect term of, you got me on too, good job. Boom. On the Oscar bait terminology of it. I think in terms of their voting, right?
Yeah.
Like it was more like, hey, look what we did. That's kind of crazy. I mean that in a similar way to like the Hurt Locker versus Avatar. You know, take the interpersonal relationship of James Cameron and Catherine Bigelow out of it. But when you have something like The Hurt Locker, that's just traditionally, wow, this is, you know, great storytelling, what a great story. And then you have, look at what we can do, right? Maybe right. The story isn't fantastic, but look at what we can do. Obviously, both those films got nominated. And Avatar, you know, a lot of its weight is carried in like the achievement of what it is. And that didn't end up winning, you know, spoiler mm-hmm. for, you know, everyone out there, sorry, in the future. But that didn't end up winning. So it's interesting to see the kind of like split of those, of like, we've been in a position before where we can award something for its level of storytelling or for what it's done. And right. We haven't always gone the same way both times. It doesn't end up with the same result. So interesting. And again, not to discredit the Broadway Melody, it was the first musical that was nominated. You know, let's put Hollywood Review aside. So two musicals at best, but again, not a traditional musical with a narrative
right.
that we know now as like, you know, your White Christmases, Singing in the Rain, Mamma Mia, put that aside. There's very many alternatives that have come from the Broadway Melody. Just happens to be that little earworm of the Broadway Melody is not as catchy as you'd want it to be.
Says you.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm still singing.
The jazz hands are still out. Yeah, I forgot.
I'm going nuts. Yeah, I mean,
I want you to sing one other phrase beyond the Broadway Melody of that jingle.
That's going to do it for today's episode.
And we're back up to 6-2.
It's yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think when you look back at the first Academy year and you have Wings, that was a movie that was innovative. It was doing things that no other film was doing.
True.
Very similar to Avatar. But Wings also had a pretty engaging story. It overall, it's a fun watch. It's interesting. Broadway Melody becomes an example of a movie that is very innovative and very groundbreaking as far as technology goes, but it doesn't have the same strength in its narrative. Was it nominated for Best Writing? I've already forgotten.
Yeah.
But it certainly didn't win. So there is that. But yeah, I get what you're saying. To me,
it was not, by the way.
There you go. Even more roof in my words there.
You were right, folks. This is what you're looking for.
Thanks, man. Yeah, but I think for me, it's not surprising that Broadway Melody won. It's not my favorite movie of the year. Let's talk about that. Broadway Melody wins, but what was your favorite movie this Oscar year?
So we talked about, you know, The Patriot. We talked about In Old Arizona, Alibi, Broadway Melody, Hollywood Review.
Nailed it.
Oh, it's tough. Honestly, the film that I walked away enjoying the most was In Old Arizona.
Right, yeah.
I don't know that I would say that it's what should have won, but I think that's the one that told the most complete story to me, that felt like there was very little filler. Mm-hmm. I was able to follow it the whole time. And it's interesting because it's also the scenario where I think that, you know, a little bit of the Broadway Melody, but it was also the most egregious in terms of what the microphone was unable to pick up. There's a whole opening sequence in Old Arizona where the stagecoach that ultimately is going to be robbed by the Cisco Kid is being loaded in. And closed captioning can't even pick up what's happening there, right? It's so sporadic of what it can pick up. So it's not even really like a complete, you know, picture in that sense because of the technology. But just as a movie alone, from the beginning to end, mm-hmm. I think that's the one that stood out to me the most as the most enjoyable.
Yeah.
Broadway Melody just drags a little bit for me. And totally. It is first of its kind, 100%. So a lot of the things that I'm comparing it to when I'm like, oh, I can see a lot of, you know, White Christmas in the relationship between these two people. And I can see a lot of Singing in the Rain of like trying to make musical productions out of like a Broadway musical.
Mm-hmm.
I understand and recognize that a lot of what I compare it to exists because of that. But it just wasn't as interesting. And it felt a little bit more pushed towards a certain direction than earned in certain places.
Yeah.
You know, specifically the love triangle and then specifically, you know, chasing after one person at the end. I didn't feel the reason that those people were pushed aside. It just kind of felt like, well, this is happening. But I would probably say that Broadway Melody makes the most sense to me behind In Old Arizona of like what should be nominated and what probably should win. Just because Hollywood Review, it feels a little bit more like catering to the time. And typically that's not what we see a lot of with the Oscars. Yeah. Now, if it's very timely, sure. But when it's like, hey, do you remember Laurel and Hardy? Do you remember these individuals? Do you remember Lon Chaney? I do. Then it makes a little bit more sense why we're not nominating and winning for that specifically, yeah. Right? Like just a call out of people who are famous at the time. You want to see more of a narrative beyond that.
Sure.
So yeah, I would say it makes a bit of sense. I liked In Old Arizona a bit more.
Yeah.
I'll say.
Yeah, I think entertainment-wise, while I was watching the films, In Old Arizona was my favorite experience.
Yeah.
Honestly, what's changed for me on this viewing of these movies, I think Alibi would be the movie I return to most often.
Interesting.
Almost for like educational purposes. I feel like there's the most experimentation going on behind the camera, well, in front of it as well, just with that proto-noir display. I think there's the most, like if I were to sit down as the head of a class and be like, we're going to talk about movies from this year. Broadway Melody has the, here's a musical, here's sound. Sure, we get it. But look at how this movie in particular, Alibi, created an entire genre, you know, one that kind of led a charge for a good while in like the 30s and the 40s. So In Old Arizona for me, Alibi, I think, a close second, and then credit to Broadway Melody just for introducing me to Bessie Love.
That's true. Okay, well, hold on. Now we've realized the corruption in all of this,
yeah.
Is that Bessie Love is going to be nominated no matter what. So,
yeah.
Okay. All right, I follow. One thing that I wanted to make sure that I bring up is I don't know how we skim past this. It's really not a super important detail, but I thought it was funny, is that current day, we actually talked about this off pod, that the nominations come out around January, right? So February is when they're supposed to be announced for the year of 2026, the 2025 nominations. For this year specifically, for 1930, the second Academy Award nominations or ceremony, those nominations came out on Halloween night, October 31st,
whoa,
in 1929. which that's just interesting to me that it would be on Halloween.
That is interesting.
Again, in the 20s, probably not the same as it is, you know, today.
Yeah.
And, you know, a little bit of fourth wall breaking. We're recording this just days after Halloween.
Right.
So it makes a bit of sense to bring up that little bit of timely knowledge.
Yeah.
So what's interesting is that that means that it would be, let's do the math on that. That is 96 years after.
Wow.
When we're covering it. Or sorry, that we're covering it 96 years after it happened.
Yeah.
So interesting. A little bit of like, you know, how close we are to it without being that close.
Yeah, yeah. We're so close to the 100th anniversary of just all of this.
It's really exciting that we're going to be doing this while we can cover that.
Yeah.
We'll do a fun little extravaganza for that.
Yeah, man. I know it would be the worst time to go, but I would love if by then we had enough momentum to like go visit the Academy Museum, which will be slammed, I'm sure, at the 100-year anniversary.
Oh my gosh, I can only imagine.
But yeah,
we have a whole 365 days of that timeline to go, though.
That's true. That's true. It doesn't have to be on like, I don't know, anniversary day, but
I mean, that's going to be nuts. Yeah, for sure.
Totally.
But also, our momentum and everything depends solely on two things. One, how much fun you and I are having, and I'm having a good bit of fun here. But also, it's going to be on everyone listening.
Yeah.
So thank you for joining us on our, you know, two runs that we've done now of Academy Awards ceremonies. Is there anything else about the second Academy Awards you want to discuss?
You know, the last thing I'll say, because technology in our modern day is advancing so rapidly, it's cool. We cover the movies in the order of their release. I think if you go back, again, you can't watch The Patriot, but if you start with In Old Arizona and you end in The Hollywood Review, it's cool to see how far sound technology advanced in just those four films. They came out almost a year apart, and there's such a huge improvement in quality. It's cool to see how quickly not only the industry adopted sound and just rolled with it, again saying, hey, we're not going to walk, we're going to run with the musical idea, but they just kept improving so rapidly. So shout out to that. It's a big reason I think it's important to go back and watch these movies so you can experience the development, the evolution of movies and the technology that surrounds them. But yeah, that's kind of it, the takeaway I got from this year specifically.
And it's worth noting, you know, this is a credit to the work that you do here, that we do together, but that you specifically set up to where that order in which you talk about watching In Old Arizona up to Broadway Melody is very much not only how we've released the episodes, but how we're watching them as well.
Right.
Right. So you and I are watching them in that order so we can see that level of, you know, progress that we've made. So very cool to be able to do that. And that's very much intentional of how we release those as well. So you can watch them in real time and see that progress that was made, not just from 1927 to 1930, but specifically within that year.
Right.
In Old Arizona up to Broadway Melody.
Yeah.
Or Hollywood Review, rather.
And that's how you end up with cool moments of Hollywood Review calling back to moments from another nominated film that year, the Broadway Melody, with yep. its actors. So just cool. Something that I thought was interesting this year.
I also just don't think watching in Old Arizona that I would have known that we were just like a few months removed from me being able to see Lon Chaney's Gonna Get You If You Don't Watch Out.
Yeah.
So just incredible.
So many great surprises.
I have a feeling that this is a high I'm not going to come down for a while.
I hope not.
Like even All Quiet on the Western Front being like, you know, as much weight as it carries in a film, I'm just going to be like, yeah, you know, the acting was great. You know, great direction. Could have used a few more Lon Chaney numbers. That it doesn't have Lon Chaney. This is going to be my biggest concern and takeaway from any movie we talk about for the next 5 years.
Totally.
So I'm going to try to get over that. I almost wish that they didn't give it to me because now I feel like I just want that all the time.
Yeah.
But still very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. You brought up All Quiet on the Western Front.
I did.
I do want to go over the movies that we'll be covering next month.
Let's talk about
this. This will be December, going over the order of films that we'll be watching. Again, we do this in release order for the reasons we mentioned a second ago. This is a little bit different. What I'd been doing is finding the movies available on YouTube and putting them in a playlist so that you can watch them with the correct scores. Some of these movies are not available on YouTube. Some of them will be, so they will be available on the YouTube playlist. That will be linked in the show notes, but you might have to search a little bit for some of these other ones. But the movies this year are going to be Disraeli, The Love Parade, The Divorcee, All Quiet on the Western Front, and The Big House. So another five films, another Academy year. We'll have that schedule posted by the time this episode's out. And yeah, I mean, A lot of stuff to look forward to.
Very excited. I mean, you know, it's we talked about a couple episodes ago when I went to McKay that I picked up the Blu-ray of All Quiet on the Western Front. So
yes.
This will make the first movie that I've watched for this podcast on physical media.
So cool.
So very excited to be doing something like that. I think actually, without giving anything away, there's one in 1931 that I have a physical copy of that we've talked about. So
yes.
Very excited to kind of start that trend and hopefully continue it.
Yeah. I'm also going to be watching a physical copy of a movie. It'll be my first. That's going to be the bootleg copy of Disraeli I got off of eBay during
nice.
The first run of the show.
Uh-oh.
It even has the little TCM logo in the bottom right corner. And maybe like a snippet of a commercial that they forgot to edit out. So,
do you know when it played?
I have no idea.
That'd be so interesting to see which commercial.
Yeah.
You're going to hear a lot about Zorbies, I'm sure.
Zorbies, yeah, probably. Yeah, I mean, that's really it for this episode. As always, you can send us in. Oh, the last thing. I don't know if this is how we'll do this moving forward, but right now this is the best way just with our recording schedule. I do want to announce, if you are a Patreon backer or you're interested in the Patreon, we do have a perk where you get to vote for the best picture winner in your opinion of the year that we're covering.
Yeah.
So for this episode, we're going to award the best picture winner of the first Academy Awards as voted by you, members of the Patreon. If you'd like to participate in future years, you can check us out at patreon.com/OUTAO podcast. But to nobody's surprise, the winner for the first Academy Award is Wings.
It does make sense. So you'll have your chance of putting in your vote there, and just make sure that you vote with a completely unbiased opinion, and it is just very much what you think should win, because if you don't, Lon Chaney is going to get you if you don't watch it.
It's true. It's very true. Bing. Hey, guys, this is Kyle from the future. We haven't decided exactly how we're going to do the Patreon winners for who you guys think is the true Best Picture winner. So we didn't originally anticipate or record the winner from the second Academy ceremony, but I'm going to announce that here, and then we're going to try and work it more naturally into the show for future ceremony episodes. But just so you know, the winner of the second Academy Awards Patreon chosen Best Picture winner is actually going to be Alibi. So you can check out the Once Upon a Time at the Oscars letterbox list, where we showcase all of the Best Picture winners as chosen by you, the members of the Patreon. Sorry for this jarring inclusion, but like I said, we'll be fitting it in more naturally as the show goes on. Back to the regular episode. Beyond that, send us in your thoughts, outaopodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on social media and everywhere else. Leave the show a review and a rating. That helps tremendously.
We'll see you in just a couple of days, and well, depending on when this comes out, but just a couple of days, and we'll be back with our 1930 discussion.
Yes.
Or movies from the 1930s, rather.
Yeah, talking about Disraeli.
Very excited.
Super hyped. That's going to do it for this episode. As always, I'm your host, Kyle.
I'm your co-host, Ryan.
And we'll
see you at the movies.